Bigfoot, Nessie, Chupacabra. Are these and other purported monsters the real deal? Or are they really not more than a fantasy of those who want to believe? We'll ask those questions on The Cryptid Report. Welcome to The Cryptid Report. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And today we're going to talk about the Jersey Devil. In fact, we're going to talk about the secret history of the Jersey Devil, how Quakers, hucksters, and Benjamin Franklin created a monster. Now, as I've said on the show before, I'm very open about this, is that cryptids for me are something I'm interested in. It kind of depends on the day of the week you ask me whether I believe that they're real or not. And I think Dr. Regal, who we're going to have with us, has a definite perspective on what this particular creature is and is not. And we're so glad to have him with us. He is Associate Professor for the History of Science, Technology, and Medicine at Kane University. And his research interests include historical aspects of human evolution, monster studies, racial anthropology, creationism, pseudoscience, the occult, esoterica, and American national origin theories. And we're so glad to have him with us. Dr. Brian Regal, welcome to the program today.
Thank you very much.
So why did you, as an academe, why did you decide to take a look at the Jersey Devil?
Well, I've been writing about monsters and cryptozoological history for a little while. The book before the Jersey Devil book was Searching for Sasquatch, Crackpots, Eggheads, and Cryptozoology. And a few years back, a colleague of mine, Dr. Frank Esposito here at Kane, we were talking about this, and he's a scholar of New Jersey history, of Native American history. And we were talking about how most of what people think they know about the Jersey Devil legend is wrong. And there was very little out there that really was much more than simply rehashing old legends and stories that no one had ever gone and checked up on. So the two of us were sitting there, and it kind of hit us at the same time. Let's write a book about this. Let's turn our skills as historians and researchers upon this particular topic and see what comes out the other end.
Now, how far back does the legend of the Jersey Devil go?
Well, there's a lot of different ways that people interpret this. The sort of commonly referred to date of the supposed birth of the Jersey Devil is 1735, but that's nonsense. That really has nothing to do with it. We traced this thing all the way back to a guy named Daniel Leeds, who is an English immigrant to what is then West Jersey, and that it all starts with him. And the other thing we realized, and we sort of anticipated this, was that there really is no Jersey Devil. There's no monster running around the Pine Barrens. I talk about this to the public a lot, and people always get upset with me when I tell them that. And I say, well, let's just rip the Band-Aid off right now. There's no Jersey Devil. There's no Bigfoot. There's no Loch Ness Monster. But I think the story that we tell about the Jersey Devil is much more interesting and much more historically important.
Now, when we say the phrase Jersey Devil, again, people have heard this many times. There may be people who have heard this all their lives, but they don't know what the prototypical Jersey Devil looks like. What is his or her behaviors? I mean, if you're looking at the classic description, if there is a classic description of the Jersey Devil, what is it?
Well, according to folklore, if we could call it the classic Jersey Devil, it's basically a kind of emaciated horse, cross between a horse and a deer, but it has wings like a bat and hooves in the front and claws in the back. I often tell people, if you want to have an idea of what the legendary Jersey Devil looks like, just imagine if Pegasus let themselves go.
If
Pegasus fell on hard times and developed a meth addiction, that's what the Jersey Devil looks like.
Now, in terms of the Jersey Devil, why would somebody go to the bother of inventing it? Or was it a case of mistaken identity? In other words, the early reports, were these people seeing something that they were just misinterpreting? Or was this an intentional creation for a particular means to an end?
Yeah, well, that's sort of a complicated question, because with most monster legends, it's not really the product of one person sitting down and intentionally coming up with a story. The Jersey Devil story, and there are actually two devils. There's the Leeds Devil, and only in the 20th century do we get the Jersey Devil. People think the Jersey Devil, the name Jersey Devil, goes way back, but it really only goes back to about between 1905 and 1909. But it's a kind of a complicated story with a lot of different threads running through it. And if we were to look at the sort of basic stereotype image of the Jersey Devil, that is invented by a group of guys who run a dime museum in Philadelphia, who the place they were running is called the 9th and Arch Street Dime Museum. Unfortunately, it's not there anymore. If you look it up on Google Maps, it's a parking lot now. And it was a magnificent sort of Victorian dance hall when it was the 9th and Arch Street Dime Museum. But they were running into problems getting people to come in to see the various attractions. It was kind of becoming old hat, and they were looking around for something new. And between 1909, 1905, you start to get these newspaper reports about strange footprints in the snow around Burlington, New Jersey, and out towards Atlantic City. And when newspaper men would go to interview people about this, someone somewhere began to say, well, you know, my great-grandfather talked about this thing, the Leeds Devil, and maybe that's what's making these tracks. And the guys who ran the 9th and Arch Street Museum heard that, and they just thought, you know, jackpot. And they begin saying that there is a creature running around. And then they put together what, as far as I can tell, is the very first monster hunt in North American history. And it's a whole big staged thing. They hire rodeo hands and circus clowns from Ringling Brothers. And they do this whole big sort of promotional thing. And, oh, we went out into the woods and we captured the Leeds Devil. But they thought that the name Leeds Devil didn't quite sing. And so they thought about it for a bit, and they said, ah, we have it. We'll call it the Jersey Devil. And it started bringing people into the museum. And the problem is, with their success, if you say we've captured this creature, people want to come and see it. You've got to have a creature to show them. So they found a guy up in Albany, New York, who rented exotic animals. And this guy had a kangaroo. God knows where he got a kangaroo from. But a guy up in Albany, New York, had a kangaroo, and they rented the kangaroo, and they brought it down to Philadelphia, and they painted it green, and they put little wings on it, and they put that on display. And so when people came in, they saw this sort of, in the dark with dramatic lighting, this sort of strange, horsey, kangaroo-y looking figure. And people immediately began saying, oh, I've seen that. I've seen it out in the woods. And we've had that ever since.
So in your view, what people are seeing is they're seeing some kind of animal or something. I mean, obviously, with anything, even for believers, I think you have to acknowledge that there are hoaxes out there. But that's anybody says, well, nobody's hoaxing. I mean, that's ridiculous. Of course, there are hoaxers out there. But people who legitimately think they've seen the Jersey Devil, in your view, they're just seeing some type of animal and they're misconstruing it, basically.
Yeah, I think for the most part, if you rule out hoaxes, you know, like I said, I give public talks all the time, and I've never given a public talk where at the end somebody didn't come up to me and say, you know, oh, thanks a lot, it was a really interesting talk, but you know, I know the Jersey Devil's real because I've seen it, and then they go on to describe it, and you know, what am I supposed to say to that? You know, you're wrong. But I think the majority of the sightings are people see something, and under the right conditions, they think they've seen something else. They haven't actually seen this creature with sort of bat wings running around the forest with red glowing eyes.
Now, in terms of, I love this subtitle, Quakers, Hucksters, and Benjamin Franklin Created a Monster. Now, we've gotten to some of the hucksters, at least, but Quakers. How did Quakers get involved in this? Did they use it as a personification of everything evil? How did they get into the mix?
Well, it's kind of complicated because they don't actually realize they're doing this. The story begins in the 1670s when people are just beginning, when Europeans are just beginning to come to the New World and come out to this region that will eventually be called New Jersey. It's not called New Jersey at the time. if anybody, if they refer to it by name at all, it's usually something like Novo Caesarea. But you start to get people coming here, especially Quakers who are religious, they're essentially Christians who are driven out of England by the Puritan majority. And they come to North America looking for a place where they can create a life, create a community without being hassled and bothered by the Puritans. They go to Boston for a little while, but by then the Puritans have control of Boston. So they leave Boston, they come south into this area, and they found a city along the Delaware River called Burlington, which is still exists, is still there. And a lot of these sort of places where this the story of the Jersey Devil begins are still there. You can still go and visit them. And kind of north of Philadelphia. In fact, Philadelphia doesn't exist yet when Burlington is founded. And they find this kind of paradise in the woods where they can live. They would be considered sort of political liberals today. They get along very well with the native people. They don't have any problems with that. They're very open-minded. And one of these early settlers is a guy named Daniel Leeds, who's about 25 when he comes to West Jersey. And he wants to make a name for himself. He wants to build a life. And like so many people, like so many immigrants who have come to America, he's here to build a life for himself. And he gets in with the Quaker community in Burlington. And he's got this sort of interesting plan. He wants to bring the philosophy of the Enlightenment and the scientific revolution to the outer edges of the empire. We don't normally think of New Jersey as the outer edges of the empire these days. You know, when people think of New Jersey, they think of Bruce Springsteen, or they think of the Sopranos, or, you know, the Jersey Turnpike and the oil refineries and all the big cities. But in this period in the late 1600s, it really is the kind of the edge of the world for the British Empire. Anywhere west of here, west of the Delaware River, is basically the moon. And so they're out on the edge, and he wants to bring science and learning and history and theology and the intellect out to this area. And he decides to do it. He's going to publish an almanac, which he does, and he immediately gets censored for it. Daniel Leeds is not just the first published author south of New York. He's also the first censored author, because his fellow Quakers, he's a Quaker too, think that he's being a little too occultish with his almanac. And they actually go around and they find all the copies of this first almanac and they destroy them. There's only a few of them left. I had to go all the way to London to find one of the few extant copies of this thing. And so he figures, well, they didn't like this. I'll put out a book. So he puts out a book called The Temple of Wisdom, where he kind of synthesizes all his ideas about science and religion and history and forward thinking and the intellect. And he thinks, well, that'll get them. That'll really get people going, and it'll, you know, they'll like this one. They didn't like the almanac, but maybe they'll like my book. And they hate the book even more than they hated the almanac. They destroy all the copies of his book. In fact, we only have one known copy of his first book, which is in Philadelphia at the Pennsylvania Historical Society. And so he gets, as you would expect, he gets a little upset at being rejected by these people who he thought of as his family. And he decides to take his revenge, and he begins publishing books critical of the Quakers. The Quakers retaliate by publishing books which are critical of Daniel Leeds, and this kind of back and forth tennis match begins with accusations going back and forth. We see here the origins of political attack literature, of scandal literature, politicians making false accusations against rivals. All that stuff that we somehow think is invented in the 21st century is all already happening here in New Jersey and in New York in the late 1600s and early 1700s. And as part of that, the Quakers begin referring to Daniel Leeds as the devil, because that was what you did back then. If you call someone the devil today, nobody really gets that worked up about it. It's almost adorable to accuse somebody of being the devil. But in the late 1600s, early 1700s, that was a serious accusation. That would be like calling someone a communist today, you know, or a traitor. And so right from the start, he's starting to get accused of occult activity. Then his son, Titan Leeds, takes over the almanac for him. And that's about when Ben Franklin shows up. Ben Franklin comes down from Boston. He moves to Philadelphia and he starts publishing an almanac, which is in direct competition with the Leeds Almanac. After the book gets censored, Danny Leeds goes back and he says, you know, to hell with these people. I'm going to start publishing my almanac again. And he starts publishing it and becomes hugely popular and runs for several decades. And his son Titan takes over. And as a kind of publicity ploy, Ben Franklin says, or starts accusing Titan Leeds of being a sorcerer and a ghost. And it works. The Leeds Almanac sort of withers and goes away and gets essentially forgotten. Nobody even remembers it today. And Ben Franklin's Core Richards Almanac becomes the one everybody thinks of. And so now you have two Leeds men, Daniel Leeds and his son Titan, being accused of sort of ghostly occult activity. And so that the term Leeds Devil starts coming around. And this is also happening at a time when those very first stirrings in North America of independence are starting to float around. And Daniel Leeds was accused of being a kind of shill for the empire because he was made a counselor to the first royal governor of New Jersey, Lord Cornbury, who, if you remember, Lord Cornbury was this guy who was accused of being a crossdresser by his enemies. And so we already have this very kind of modern sort of bare knuckle approach to politics. And so that's where this reputation will begin to grow. And over the years, what starts off as the Leeds Devil as a kind of political smear will very slowly, over the course of the 19th century, kind of evolve into a forced monster until the early 20th century when the guys at the 9th and Arch Street Dime Museum get a hold of it and then really sort of turn it into a deadly creature that eats people.
Now, well, that's what you actually just hit on it at the end. Were there reports of the devil actually attacking people, damaging them, hurting them, killing them?
Well, there are a few reports of that where the Jersey Devil, you know, affrighted people in the woods. And there are occasional sort of apocryphal stories about a creature physically attacking people. But what I always found interesting about these later reports is that if you look at them all, the Jersey Devil doesn't really do anything. It's just sort of there. People encounter, they claim they see this thing in the woods, and you get the sort of flapping wings and the glowing eyes, and the people who claim they've seen it usually run in the opposite direction. And that's really the extent of these encounters. And it's kind of a monster that doesn't really act that monstrous.
That's interesting. Why do you think, and this could be a broader discussion, why do you think that the myth of the Jersey Devil continues? Why do you think that is?
Well, I'm a historian. I'm not a psychologist, so I don't really have the skill sets to explain that. But I think people like the idea of monsters. We have monsters all around us. Very few of the actual monsters look like what we think monsters look like. They usually look like human beings. And, you know, the idea that there might be this sort of creature or running around the Pine Barrens of New Jersey, or a sort of tall, hairy, human-like creature running around the Pacific Northwest, or swimming off the coast of Florida, or, you know, in Loch Ness, or running around the snows of Nepal. I think it's an interesting idea. It draws people's attention. And the more that happens, the more the story gets embellished and gets advanced along, and more stuff gets attached to it. So I think we like monsters. We like the idea of being scared by things.
That makes a lot of sense indeed. Now, here's a question for you. One of the things that I love to do is see old accounts of things like this in newspapers and so forth. Was that as newspapers came into vogue and so forth, I think about things like the penny press and those types of things. Did the Jersey Devil become a great headline grabber? Was this something that they could put in their issue to titillate readers? Was that something you saw happening with the Jersey Devil?
Yeah, but that doesn't really happen to the 20th century. The earliest printed reference we could find to any of this that directly mentions a monster comes out in the 1840s, where this New York newspaper man decided to spend some time in the backwoods of New Jersey, talking to people who we'll call pineys, which was sort of a derogatory term of these people who lived in these little isolated communities deep in the woods. And so he decides to start going around and speaking to these people and seeing what their lives are like and, you know, how do they survive, how do they make a living. And he recounts a story where he talked to some woman, elderly woman named Hannah Butler, who lives deep in the forest in a kind of tent-like hovel. And while he's speaking with her, her nephew is there, and they're having a fine old chat. And someone in the group says, oh, it looks like it's going to rain tonight. And she says, Hannah Butler says, well, yeah, probably, but I remember the night, that really bad storm when I first saw the Leeds Devil. And everybody in the group sort of freezes. And the interviewer, he's like, well, tell me more about this. Tell me more about this. I've never heard this before. Leeds Devil, what is that? And so they don't want to talk about it. And they sort of leave. And he then writes this article about this creature that people supposedly know called the Leeds Devil. That's from the 1840s. And that was the earliest printed reference we could ever find to it. Now, there's something called the Vance Larner Diary, which supposedly dates to the 1790s. But when we looked for that, we searched for it everywhere. One of the things I want to say here is that Frank Esposito and myself are historians. What we do for a living is we track down sources. We look for letters, we look for diaries and notebooks and lost books and any kind of written material. That's what we do for a living. And we could not find any evidence that this Vance Larner diary existed. In it, it says that they saw the Leeds Devil and sort of describe it in the kind of modern way that people describe it. But we determined that this was a hoax. And it was a 20th century hoax. And so until somebody actually comes up with a copy, that's the way we treated it. And so there really is no early reference to a monster. It starts off politically and only becomes a kind of biological entity in the late 19th and early 20th century.
Now, I believe when somebody undertakes a project like this, even someone as learned as yourself in general or in a particular issue, that at the end, there's got to be something that you say, well, geez, I didn't expect that. What surprised you about the history of the Jersey Devil?
I guess the thing that surprised me a little bit was the way this cast of characters that's involved with the modern version of the story developed. For example, along with the Jersey Devil itself and then Daniel Leeds, the other main character is someone named Mother Leeds. And so we thought, well, maybe we can track that down. Maybe there's because the Leeds family did exist. It was a large family. There's still lots of people named Leeds living in New Jersey. If you go down around Atlantic City, the first mayor of Atlantic City was named Leeds. If you drive around down there, you'll find streets and roads and, you know, places named Leeds. And so they're still around. And so we thought, oh, well, maybe we can find some reference to some person who was called Mother Leeds. And we were never able to actually find that. And Daniel Leeds himself had a number of wives, had a whole string of wives. And they all seemed to die very quickly after getting married to him. One of them produced a number of children. One of his later wives was named Jane. And in some of the variations on the Jersey Devil story, Mother Leeds' name is supposedly Jane. But we couldn't find any reference to anybody actually called Mother Leeds. That's the problem that people have with historians. We're not willing to accept things unless we can see written evidence of it. And we couldn't find any relating to that. But what we found, what we think the person who may have been used as a model for this, is a woman named Anne Hutchinson, who was a real woman who lived in Boston in the middle 1700s. And she was a kind of pioneering women's rights activist. She made a lot of people in Boston upset because she was fighting for women's equality before we even had names for such things. And she also had 13 children, the 13th of which was stillborn. And in what at the time, anytime a child was born with birth defects, they were referred to as monstrous births. And so when she had this monstrous child, which died immediately, the Puritan clergy, the Christian clergy of Boston, began using her, because they hated her so much, they began using her as a model of poor female behavior. And they would preach and say, you see, this is what happens when women go outside their place, and when women are outspoken, God punished her by making this 13th child a monster. And so while we never actually found any written connection between Anne Hutchinson and Mother Leeds, it seems to us to be a fairly good model, because the story of Anne Hutchinson was well known even at the time. So we think that might have been where the story, the character of Mother Leeds might have begun. So that was something that interested me and sort of surprised me.
Well, it's been a great conversation and given us some new perspectives on the question of the Jersey Devil. The book is The Secret History of the Jersey Devil, How Quakers, Hucksters, and Benjamin Franklin Created a Monster. Our guest has been Dr. Brian Regal. Dr. Regal, where can people find the book?
Well, it's on eBay and on Amazon. They just put out a paperback copy of it. So it's really easy to get. If you want to see my webpage, just Google my name, and my Kane University webpage will come up, and you can see a lot of the stuff I do and download a bunch of articles and op-ed pieces I've done over the years for free. And, if you have questions, you can contact me, and I'm on social media, and I'm there quite often, so you can contact me there and ask questions.
Well, Dr. Regal, it's been fascinating, very interesting, The Secret History of the Jersey Devil. Thank you for joining us today on the program.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, that was a very interesting conversation with Dr. Regal, and I will say this. You know, we have people all the time on the programs who say, yes, these creatures exist. These are real things. And I'm not saying that they're not. I think in some cases there are real creatures out there, so I wouldn't put myself exactly in Dr. Regal's camp. However, I think as people who, for the most part, would consider themselves believers, I think it is important to hear from the other side. Plus, I love history. I love the idea of lore. And I'm one of those people who believes, yeah, a lot of things we hear are legend and lore, but there is some kernel of truth to it. And as for the Jersey Devil, I don't really know, but it's fascinating having the discussions with both believers and skeptics alike, and I hope you feel the same. Thank you for being a part of the Plus Club. We'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody, and happy holidays!